two things that are fun 12 months out of the year, talking Raiders football and tailgating. So let Clay and Vinny help you out with both on the Morning Tailgate.
Thanks for being with us here on Raider Nation Radio, the Morning Tailgate, here on R&R 920 AM. Clay Baker, Vinny Bonsignor. Catch our podcast up online after the show at lvsportsnetwork.com, as well as Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all sorts of platforms. Keep listening. We got your thoughts up on the text line and phone number at 702-365-9200. It's brought to you by the Dollar Loan Center. Case Kiefer joins us now. Great writer with the Las Vegas Sun, as well as contributing editor with the Sun, as well as Las Vegas Weekly Magazine. Free publication at Terrible Herps, PTs, all newsstands here in Las Vegas, including here at Lotus Broadcasting. Make sure you pick up yours today here on Raider Nation Radio. Case, thank you for joining us. Good morning to you. Yeah, we're just talking about Raiders' defensive line and where it ranks against the rest of the league. And when you look at how maybe PFF sets it up, the Raiders are ninth in the league as far as their defensive line power rankings are concerned. How do you feel like this year's defensive line will compare to last year's? Because last year, it really became an asset for the team, and it was more than just Max Crosby.
Yeah, nine seems a little low to me, but at the same time, and I know probably some fans are fired up, but you do kind of want to see it first, and it's a little bit different, like you said, than last year with throwing Christian Wilkins in there. To me, they should probably be in the top five, and I think they will end up being there. You know, to be honest, I think maybe I'd be a little more skeptical if they didn't haven't added that huge piece. I mean, okay, as good as they were at the end of last year, we see this on defense all the time where a position group really breaks out for a little stretch. We could kind of get carried away with a little stretch and say, okay, now yes, this is one of the best in the NFL. It's just gonna stick. Mm-hmm, it doesn't a lot of times. I think when you add, another superstar on there, I think that gives me confidence to say that it's going to be the strength of the team, and as long as everyone stays healthy, it should be a top five unit.
Case, I want to take you to our good friend Mike Florio over at Pro Football Talk, and he released his 2024 power rankings, his initial power rankings. It's preseason. We haven't even gotten to training camp yet, but this is Mike Florio, his list, and he's got the Raiders at number 26, which to me indicates that he has zero faith in the quarterbacks, because when you think about the Raiders roster, as good as it really is across the board, for them to finish 26 or even to start 26, it means Mike Florio doesn't think that Gardner Minshew or Aiden O'Connell are going to get the job done at any kind of a decent level. So he's got the Raiders at number 26, and the Jets at number 25, by the way, which I think is also kind of ludicrous. But what are your initial thoughts on the Raiders being 26, especially when you throw in the fact that he's got the Broncos number 22 and the Chargers at number 15?
Wow, the Jets being out of all of that, sorry, just kind of stole my attention.
I'm right?
Happy the Jets at 25.
How?
Yeah, I mean, even just beyond the fact of how much talent they have, just the buzz there. I feel like everyone likes them, so that's a little crazy. Yeah, the ratings. I don't know, that some of those numbers seem a little bit off to me, especially I guess in comparison to where other people are. I think maybe the Broncos won't be as bad as people expect too, but to have them five spots above the Raiders or whatever it is, and above the Jets too, that's a little wild to me. But hey, I'm all for everyone putting out their ratings. it gives us something to talk about. I hope he's not trying to bring these to the betting market and make money off of them. So I think they're a little bit flawed.
But do you often feel, and we're speaking with Case Kiefer from the Las Vegas Sun and Las Vegas Weekly Magazine, when you think about how the perception around quarterback pushes teams up a little higher than probably they deserve? And we see, like, in this list from PFT that even the Broncos are at 22, four ticks higher than the Raiders are, mostly because of Bo Nix. How do you think that's going to play out as he becomes a, maybe jettisoning as a week one starter? How do you think that changes the perception for Denver when we kind of know that there's plenty of spots on that problem, on that machine?
Oh yeah, my bad. I kind of got away from the quarterback conversations because I was taken aback. And yeah, I think you do see. The quarterback has such a huge pull in this, in where they land. And I think, there are reasons to be skeptical of the Raiders situation. But you look back at the end of last year, and I think even in the top half of the league, there were a lot of teams that didn't have a great quarterback system nailed down. I think it just reduces your margin of error. So, you know, I know how talented we think the rest of the roster is. I just think you can't accept a step backwards with any of those position groups or any of those guys when, you know, even best case scenario, you're probably going to be getting middling quarterback play. As far as Bo Nix and the Broncos, I have to say, Bo Nix was the quarterback and the first-round quarterback this year I was the lowest on. I really didn't think all that highly of him, but I do think he lands in a pretty good situation with Sean Payton. It's one of those like schematic things where I feel like this could work. I'm not saying I'm picking the Broncos to win the Super Bowl or even be a really good team, but you know, we talk about it all the time, how much fit matters in these things. And I do think if I'm Bo Nix, I'd rather be in Denver than anywhere else with his skill set and that coaching staff and the way it meshes.
Yeah, and Case, here's what's crazy to me. If you're diminishing the Raiders for the quarterback play, which I get, I understand. I don't think that you know, that Aiden or Gardner are going to play to be the, you know, play a level of quarterback play that's going to be the sixth that leads to the team being the sixth worst team in the NFL. I disagree with that, but we'll see. But if you're gonna put that credence on the quarterbacks on the negative way, what do you think he's saying about Aaron Rodgers and the Jets? Like, does he not think that Aaron Rodgers is just not going to be healthy? I guess that could be a consideration. But if you're – I don't know that you could go into a season just assuming that he's not going to be healthy. And if he is healthy, it's Aaron Rodgers. He's an MVP-caliber player every single year. What do you think this is saying about the Jets and Aaron Rodgers and where he has them listed?
Yeah, well, my guess is, and I haven't read it or seen what Mike said, but my guess would be that he'd say it's a 41-year-old or whatever he is coming off an Achilles surgery. How can we trust him? Which, you know, in general, I would kind of understand, but I think you said the key three words or whatever. This is Aaron Rodgers, right? Or four words, excuse me. I mean, I think a guy that's been a multiple-time MVP, one of the best quarterbacks of his generation, I think he deserves a little bit of a benefit of the doubt. You know, I know some Jets fans probably think he probably has a bone to pick with Rodgers. I think Florio has that reputation.
There is that.
So maybe they're just butting heads, and it's another way to stick it to Rodgers. But I do get being a little bit skeptical with his age and coming off such a major surgery at that age. But again, this isn't just some journeyman we're talking about. This is one of the best quarterbacks in NFL history.
Perception's a funny thing, even about this time of the year. Any pre-camp power rankings, you know, they have to be taken with a grain of salt. But at the same time, we'll always constantly see, you know, at this portion of the year, people really falling in love with what Jim Harbaugh can do for Justin Herbert and the Chargers. And the Chargers are kind of like 15th, middling of their way. And I understand it. I see it every year. I think you do, too. It's like there's always this great, you know, pie-in-the-sky atmosphere for the Chargers each and every time in the summer. Now, there was a stat that came out about Justin Herbert when he throws an interception. His win rate goes down very, very much. When he throws one interception, his win rate goes down to 31%, whereas comparatively to like Lamar Jackson or Josh Allen, it's 70%. If he throws more than two picks or two picks plus, it's down to 13%. I'm adding to that, thinking about week one for the Raiders and with a new group of wide receivers, could Justin Herbert be in a little bit of trouble, and how can the Raiders take advantage of that inability to overcome your own mistakes?
Yeah, and it's not an easy matchup for him either. I mean, we know the Raiders have some ball hawks, and I think as much as we talk about the emergence of some of the other guys, especially on the defensive line, I mean, turnovers were such a huge part of what they did at the end of last year. So I got to think you feel good with the Raiders in that perspective. And, you know, it's going to be a new system, as we know. So it's going to take a week or two to sink in. I think maybe when I've heard about this game discussed and stuff, it's not something that I've really heard as much. I know the Raiders will have a new offensive scheme too, so there's going to be some growing pains there. So I don't know if you're looking at it from that perspective. Maybe it's a lower scoring game where you know, you could see both offenses making some mistakes. But yeah, I certainly think it sets up good for the Raiders defense, and we'll see if they can continue that turnover train in week one.
Here's my question about that. I get the statistic. I do, and certainly it's something that the Raiders can take advantage of. But how much do you think that's Justin Herbert, or was, I should say, how much was that Justin Herbert going in the tank after he threw his first interception, or what I believe happened? I don't think the Chargers were mentally strong enough. They've never been a mentally strong team to collectively, as a team, deal with that kind of adversity and that kind of a setback. And what I have to wonder is, is the presence of Jim Harbaugh going to strengthen that ability for the Chargers to deal with that adversity so that if something does go awry, they're not going to do what they've typically done in the past, which those statistics show that they have, and that's just go in the tank, whether it's your quarterback, and I think it's less him and more the team. How much of an edge can Harbaugh bring to that mental toughness of the Chargers?
Yeah, I mean, certainly in everything it says, it seems like at least the quotes or the sound bites I've heard from him, or that's exactly what he wants to bring, and it's what he's done at every stop, that he wants a tough-nosed team that's mentally strong, not only playing a physical brand of football, but also having that mentality. It's just one of those things I kind of need to see first before mm-hmm. I just totally sign off on it. I don't think the Chargers roster, and I agree with what Clay was saying earlier, too, it seems like every year we talk ourselves into the Chargers, and certainly I've been guilty of it, too. There, I think a couple years ago I was super high on them.
Yeah.
But I think some of those teams had better rosters. I mean, they're kind of in a little bit of a rougher spot here. They're kind of, you know, rebuilding with the new regime. So, I mean, Justin Herbert's a great starting point, but like you said, the weapons are kind of diminished. So I kind of need to see this new group, and I got to ask them to prove that they have that before I just say Harbaugh is going to bring it. I think eventually they'll probably get there, but I don't know. It's always tough in year one. I'm just so in the middle on the Chargers. I can't decide where to go with them this year. So I'll give Florio some depth. I think right in the middle is fair with them.
Right. And it hope springs eternal. I always get blinded by the light of like the preseason, the light that goes around the Chargers, because it always makes me believe, like, could this be the year? And it never is, you know?
The thing is, being in the middle now gets you into the playoffs. You've got 14 teams going to the playoffs. And I don't see that the Chargers – I don't see that turnaround for them going from where they were. And I'm with you. I think they eventually get there with Jim Harbaugh. But a one-year turnaround that's going to put them in the playoff hunt, I don't know. I don't see it.
Maybe in the NFC, yeah. I'm not as I guess bearish on them not making the playoffs. I just really don't know. I'm throwing my hands up at the AFC guy. You just start counting the spots, and
right.
I mean, there's 13 teams that think that they have a real shot this year. So it's tough in that side of the bracket.
You know, we were talking about the overall message that's being sent on some of these power rankings, you know, in the pre-camp stuff. And we see how certain teams that are kind of like in the Raiders mix and their schedule from the AFC that are ahead of them on this power list. One of them is the Dolphins, right? And, you know, they've gone through a lot of changes in the offseason because they weren't able to afford everybody to come back, including somebody like Christian Wilkins. But, you know, now we're starting to see, like, even from ESPN's NFL Live, Jeff Darlington said yesterday that he says, based on his conversations, the Dolphins and Tua Tagovailoa are not in the same market value. Dolphins are not offering a contract that is market value comparable to Jared Goff in the Trevor Lawrence ballpark. Do you think that this will go into, like, he's playing on the fifth year option right now for Tua? Do you think because of the low scale offers right now that Tua's possibility going to be playing on a tag next year instead of getting an extended contract?
Yeah, I think that's certainly a possibility. It all kind of surprises me, not necessarily because I'd be running to pay Tua, although I think eventually just the nature of the NFL, we know how quarterbacks are.
Sure.
I think you'd kind of have to. But I'm just surprised because it seems like they were clearing space. I mean, I thought it was always part of the reason why they let Wilkins leave. They let a lot of other big name defensive guys go. So I thought they were kind of clearing the path to make this happen. So the whole story kind of surprises me. But yeah, I mean, right now, I think that's a definite possibility. We'll see how that all plays out in the drama. But yeah, it seems like they're far apart. So the franchise tag might be a real possibility.
Here's the fire that they're playing with, though. It never gets cheaper. So if basically what they're telling him, if you read between the lines, show us what you got in this fifth year, and then we'll sit down and talk one way or another, whether it's to let you go, whether it's, you know, the franchise tag, or if you deliver a really good year, now we're probably going to be paying more than what you're asking for, in July or August. And so in that game of fire that the Dolphins are playing, basically telling Tua, show us what you got. You got one more year to tell us that you're the guy moving forward. How do you think that that's going to play out in that one year?
Yeah, it's such an interesting case study with them just as a team, too. I don't want to put it all on Tua, but you just remember back each of the last 2 years, they start on fire, and they look like a surefire Super Bowl contender. Then, you know, as the year drags on, I know they've dealt with a little bit of injuries, but even Tua himself just, you know, can't keep that same rhythm. So I think to me, it's can you do it for a whole year? And I don't know. I'm a little bit skeptical. I feel like we have a long history with him now, and he puts up great numbers. But I also just think he's in like one of the best situations possible. I think this offense, they really tailored for him. I think all the world of Mike McDaniel schematically, and I don't think they've capitalized on it yet. Not to say that they couldn't, but I don't know. Maybe it's recency bias, but I just keep remembering that the ends of the year where it just seems like they're always out of gas and can't quite get it done. So I'd say we're probably going to be in the same position a year from now where we don't really know what to make of it and which side is going to get their way.
Well, it makes me wonder, like, all right, for Tua, you know, you lead the league in passing yardage, you're fifth in touchdowns thrown, but it's still just not enough, right? So if for McDaniel in his system, which I agree with you, I love watching it. It was just awesome to behold, but it almost seemed like they kind of got found out or something happened towards the end of the year where they just couldn't push ahead and they couldn't rely on their offense to win them games. What do you think they could do differently with that offense, especially when they try to go back to that game in Kansas City in the snow and in the weather? What could they have done differently to win that game? Because it seemed like they weren't far away from that.
Oh, yeah. God, I don't say this lightly. I just don't know how to put it any nicer. I mean, they just kind of look soft in that Kansas City game. Mm-hmm. So I guess have a better record so you don't have to go on the road. And the other thing that will never happen is I feel like you need to put Tyreek Hill in bubble wrap somehow early in the season because he just wasn't himself by the end of last year, even before he missed some games. I know he was dealing with other injuries. You know, as much as Mike McDaniel gets the credit, I think maybe Tyreek Hill deserves some too because I feel like when he's fresh and at the beginning of the year he's such a huge difference maker and I just feel like it's been tough for him to stay healthy towards the end of the year, and I just feel like it's such a big difference. I know Jaylen Waddle's a good player too, but just to have that field stretcher and just as electric as Tyreek Hill is, I don't know if there's just anything you can do to keep him a little bit healthier and try to get home playoff games. Easier said than done, but I think that's got to be their path to success.
Is the word we're looking for or the phrase we're looking for front runners? They feel like a front running team. They feel like when it's all going great, you know, they are. It reminds me of the Clippers with Lob City. But the minute you punch them in the nose, that's when you see the real Miami Dolphins. And what is it going to take for them to change that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the front runner tag is fair based off of these last couple years. We'll see. I know we've been talking a lot about offenses changing so far this segment, but they're going to have a big defensive shift with you know, after Vic Fangio is only in there 1 year.
And wow, right.
Obviously now they're rebuilding with you know, a couple of their biggest name players going. So I think maybe defensively that is where that identity shift has to start. Maybe they can be a little tougher nosed on there. I mean, I feel like even these games where they're blowing out and clearly going to win, I feel like the defense in the past has kind of let off the pedal a little bit and kind of gotten the scores up there. So I think maybe if you're trying to change that identity, I think offensively they are what they are. You just hope everyone stays healthy. But I think defense is maybe where they can be a little nastier, I guess, for lack of a better word.
Case, thank you so much for coming on today. You do such a great job with the Las Vegas Sun, as well as Las Vegas Weekly Magazine. It's a real pleasure to have you on. Thank you again for coming on a short week.
All right, good talking to you guys.
Thank you. At Case Kiefer on X, contributing editor with Las Vegas Weekly Magazine, assistant sports editor with The Sun, and reporter following the Raiders. And, yeah, the Fangio stuff is interesting because, you know, if you want to feel like you could take advantage of a division like the Miami Dolphins, certainly felt they could last year, now that, you know, you don't have to worry about, you know, the typical, you know, problem in the room in your division with, you know, the New England Patriots. And at 11-6 record, what do you have to worry about? But you still have to deal with Buffalo. But Fangio, he improved that defense pretty well with what he had to work with last year. And now without him, can you continue to play and be like, you know, a team that still allows, you know, like a lot of points and be 22nd in the league in points allowed? Is that still like a championship defense? Maybe Fangio had something, but they never gave him enough time.
Well, I'll tell you this, hearing players talk about how it's so much simpler now, you know, with the new defensive coordinator, that tells me more about you than it tells me about Vic Fangio. So again, it goes back to, you know, and I don't think Christian Wilkins would be saying those types of things right now. And I think that he's you know, gonna show what he's all about here with the Raiders. But for players to be talking about that, you know, Vic Fangio is one of the great defensive coordinators in this game. And if you couldn't respond to him, and if you couldn't grasp what he was doing, again, that's on you. And it tells me a little bit about their mindset in Miami, and the word front runner, until further notice, that's what they will be to me. I don't care what they do, you know, in September or October. They'll probably put up gaudy numbers, and you know, I think their coaching staff and their offensive staff are great at what they do, and they've got some great young players and some great weapons, and I think Tua is a decent quarterback, or a good quarterback, could be even better, but I got to see it when it counts. That's just a team that. Right. You know, they feel like cotton candy. You know, when you take a bite of cotton candy, it tastes really good to start off. But within 2 seconds, it just goes flavorless because all the sugars run out and it's just you're left with nothing. It just dissipates in your mouth. So they kind of have the feel of that. And once you get stuck in that world, it's hard to climb out of, because you're just always wondering when that other shoe is going to fall. When are we going to be able to respond, you know, to this situation? We haven't. There's no body of work that they could draw on and say, you know, we've dealt with this before. We've pushed through this barrier, in the past. It's actually the opposite. They've always faltered, or you know, in recent times, they've always faltered in the moments of truth. And you know, once that seed gets planted, it's hard to overcome that seed. So I'm going to have to see it from the Miami Dolphins. But to me, they are playing a little bit of game with fire with Tua. He can respond in a contract year with a fantastic year, and then it's going to just cost them more money to sign him at the end of the year. And quite honestly, what is the alternative? Mm-hmm. What's the alternative? I would, you know, from the outside looking in, I'm like, man, I don't know if I'd pay Tua $55 million. But at the same time, if you start digging a little bit deeper, oh, okay, so then what are they going to do at quarterback if they let him go? Like, what's the alternative?
So now you kind of got two holes on either side of the ball if you're not really taking care of that one investment that you feel like you can start winning games with. And that's nothing to sniff at when you lead the league in passing yardage. That's something you should probably covet a little more than what you're doing.
And what's the option behind him? Where's the quarterback that's going to give you what he gives you? Mm-hmm. You know, which is hard to do. Even that level of quarterback play is extremely hard to recapture in a different player. And there's no guarantee that you're going to be able to get anybody that's even close to him. So I don't know. You know, it's you're sometimes between a rock and a hard place in these situations. Or do you just say, hey, look, we just don't think that we're going to get to the promised land with him. Yes, it's going to be ugly potentially. If you move on from him for these next couple of years, it could be 5 years, it could be 10 years for the crying out loud. You don't know when that next great quarterback's coming through your building, or next really good quarterback for that matter. So they have some certainty in Tua, and to walk away from him would be risky business. But if you truly feel like we're spending this money for naught, we don't think that in any circumstance a guy like Tua is going to get us to the Super Bowl. As painful as it might be to move on from him, we feel like that's the best thing to do. I would respect that, but it is going to put them in, if they do that, it puts you in a really tight spot, because there's no guarantee that you're ever going to replicate or anytime soon what you already have, even if there's a ceiling that doesn't include a Super Bowl in that ceiling.
It's this year or nothing, because if you've paid your two wide receivers $30 million plus while your quarterback's still on like a rookie deal, man, you got to hit it now, or it's just never going to happen, because you're going to have to pay the piper, because I don't think you feel the same about Mike White and Skylar Thompson at quarterback. We'll take a break. We'll come back. The NFL team-by-team Mount Rushmore is out. We'll tell you who the sources have for the Raiders, but we also want to hear your thoughts. Who is on your Raiders Mount Rushmore?
Only four, and just players. We all know, to me, yes. Al Davis is the mountain itself.
Yeah, right.
So he's obviously he's the face of this whole thing, and without question. But we're talking in this exercise, players. Who are your Raider, who's your four person Mount Rushmore for the Raiders that were players for the Raiders?
All right, send them in, 702-365-9200. We'll take your calls. Also, the keyword of the day, concert. Send that in as well, 702-365-9200. You can text that here on Raider Nation Radio.
Always a great time to talk about our good friends over at Dos Catas Tequila. Shout out to Les Kekahuna, our good friend, and I'm sure he's geeked up about the draft. By the way, Raider Nation Radio is broadcasting the draft starting at 4 o'clock tonight or today. So be sure to check that out. But our good friends over at Dos Catas Tequila, I mention this quite often because it's the perfect pairing. They're working with La Casa Cigar and Lounge over at Tivoli Village, and our good friend Mike Prieto, a huge Raider fan that owns La Casa, and he and Dos Catas have paired up, in which Mike's set aside some of his specialty cigars and specifically paired each of those specialty cigars with the great labels of Dos Catas Tequila. So you can chill in a great atmosphere, a chic atmosphere, with great music and great friends and great Raider fellowship, because Mike will talk your ear off about the Raiders if you get him started. He loves talking about the silver and black, while also enjoying a great cigar and some great Dos Catas Tequila. So go check out Mike and Les over at Tivoli Village La Casa Cigar and Lounge. If you want to go shop for some Dos Catas Tequila here locally, and it's the hottest tequila brand in Las Vegas, so why wouldn't you? Head over to Total Wine, head over to Lee's Liquor. Both carry all the labels of Dos Catas Tequila. And if you're not in Las Vegas, go to doscatasspirits.com. You can order everything you want of all the Dos Catas brands and have them shipped directly to you. That's at doscatasspirits.com.
Welcome back to Raider Nation Radio, the morning tailgate. Clay Baker, Vinny Bonsignor here with you. Hit phones 702-365-9200 and the text line 702-365-9200. We want to hear from you as the NFL Films in the archive has put out the annual Mount Rushmore for each NFL team, the Raiders included. And we want to get your thoughts. Who is on your Mount Rushmore, players only? Obviously, there are some historic figures, as Vinny talked about, like a can't start the Raiders conversation without Al Davis, but they're looking at players only. Players only Mount Rushmore. And we're seeing on the text line some people are throwing in like a current day Mount Rushmore with current players. I like that too. We'll take them all in here. 702-365-9200. It's hard to find four. When you think about the storied franchises in the league.
It's easy to find four.
It's hard to limit it to four because, especially for the Raiders, like, where do you start? Because there are so many Hall of Famers. There are so many influencers on the game itself. Like, the early eras of Raider football, kind of like they stretch your imagination far and wide of, like, who belongs up there in the stratified air.
And then when you take one off, if you say, but this guy deserves to be on there, then who do you take off? There's too many good players. That's the point here.
There's a lot of the
right?
good players.
It's impossible to limit it to just four. And I equate the Raiders' plight with teams like the Celtics and the Lakers and the Yankees and the Dodgers, that where you have just this abundance of worthy candidates, but you have to limit it to four because that's what Mount Rushmore is. It's the four faces of the United States of America up until that point, when mm-hmm. it was the 1930s or so that it was put up there. But it's hard to argue with Thomas Jefferson, Abraham Lincoln, George Washington, and Teddy Roosevelt. That's like a who's who, obviously, of our history. But if you're talking about the Raiders and pro football, what was it, talk or no, NFL.com.
Yeah, NFL Films.
Put this
yep.
one out there. And it was Tim Brown.
Mm-hmm.
It was Kenny Stabler. It was Gene Upshaw, and it was, who am I missing? Who's the fourth?
Howie Long?
No, it wasn't Howie Long.
Did they throw in Howie?
No.
Howie didn't get it?
I thought you were looking at the list over there. Hold on a second. I got it.
Let's play it here. This is from NFL Films from the archives.
They're going to name them. Okay, here we go.
Las Vegas Raiders, Gene Upshaw, Ken Stabler, Tim Brown, and Marcus Allen.
Right, Marcus.
Marcus.
All right. So when you hear that, Marcus Allen, Tim Brown, Gene Upshaw, and Kenny Stabler, it's hard to argue that. There's no arguing that. Mm-hmm. All four of them deserve to be among the top four. But then you start thinking about, where's Lester Hayes? Where's Fred Biletnikoff? Where's Jim Otto? What about Jim Plunkett? And the guy won two Super Bowls for the Raiders. And so you could go on and on and on. And if you say Lester Hayes, or let's just say Cliff Branch, Fred Biletnikoff. Okay, yes. But then who do you take off that list?
Who comes off?
Right. That's the biggest question. It's not so much that you probably could come up with three or four different Howie Long, for crying out loud. Right. So there's some real worthy candidates out there, and limiting it to just four is just so difficult because there's so many good players. But hey, we're asking you 702-365-9200. Please text us or call us. Who is on your Raiders Mount Rushmore? And I kind of like the idea of, you can make it a little bit easier on yourself by doing it by era. So maybe you have, you know, the 60s through the 70s and maybe the 80s through 2000 and 2000 to now. Maybe you could break it up that way to make it a little bit easier on yourself. But it's not supposed to be easy. It's supposed to be really difficult. And when you think about the great organizations, and the Raiders absolutely are right up there with the Lakers and the Dodgers and the Celtics and the Yankees in terms of, you know, what they've been able to do over the years and the historical meaning that they have in their sport and all the Hall of Famers that they've developed and enshrined in Canton, Ohio. Who's your top four? Who's your face of the franchise in terms of the Mount Rushmore of the Raiders?
From the 817, David texting in says Jim Otto, yeah. Tim Brown, Howie Long, Art Schell. Okay.
Yeah, Art Schell too.
All right. Hard to argue with that. Here's another one from Fabian. He says Otto, Stabler, Blanda, and Biletnikoff.
Blanda.
Yeah, see, some of these have like very compelling arguments, but also there's a personal thing when you start naming it because you feel like who do I think is the identity
right.
of this storied Raiders franchise?
A lot of this will be who's your era of, not trying to age you, Fabian, you're a spry 28. But you know, it's generally gonna represent kind of your era, your heyday, your wheelhouse of the Raiders. Not that that changes. I know Fabian is as big a fan as he is today as he was, you know, back in the '70s and the '80s. But I think there's something to be said about who captured your imagination, especially at a certain age of life and the meaning that they have for you. So this is literally your Raiders Mount Rushmore. So it's the meaning that those players have for you specifically and what those players represent to you. So there's no wrong answer here. And we're just asking, give us a call, 702-365-9200. Give us your personal Mount Rushmore of the Raiders.
Let's go out to Baltimore with Sean. Sean, thank you for holding. Good morning. Who's your Mount Rushmore?
So my Mount Rushmore, I go back, like, when I think of the Raiders, like, who I think of, like, when you think of the Raiders, the first person that comes to mind is the Snake Man. So he on there. Cool. And then I go to between Marcus Allen, like running back, because I'm a Bo Jackson fan, man. So that's why I didn't do Marcus Allen. So let me roll with the guard, Gene Upshaw.
Okay.
And then let's go like recently, like Charles Woodson, the Hall of Famer.
Oh, yes.
And then let's go real recent. The face of the Raiders now, Max Crosby. Mm. Like I try to do two on defense and two on offense. Man.
Okay.
So that's where my Mount Rushmore is.
Yeah, Sean, I love it, man. Thank you for doing that. Have a great day.
It still irks me a little bit that that the Mount Rushmore leaders, whoever, did they just run out of Mountainside or something like that, or whatever it is that they car? Why didn't they do five? Five is just such a better number than four. Five, you know, it's the top five, you know, I'm doing right now, yeah. Top five quarterback controversies of all
start
time.
Start another mountain. That's what I like here. Like, we see that also from the text line, 702-365-9200, which is hilarious because people are like, start another mountain, put Max and Charles Woodson on another one. But, Eddie in Denver says he likes, Plunkett, Howie, Marcus, and Tim Brown. So, but also, he wants to buy another mountain and start adding more faces.
What's his name, Howie?
Yeah, that's Eddie in Denver.
Eddie, yeah. So yeah. I'm assuming Eddie was an 80s Raider guy. Like, that was probably his heyday. And certainly, you couldn't go wrong with those four because, you know, and what they meant. You know, the 80s Raiders won two Super Bowls, 79. They won it in 80. They won it again in 83. They were always, you know, competitive and just one of the really good teams. But those 80s Raiders teams, the 70s were just, they lived, the Raiders did, in the AFC Championship game. You know, they had some problems dealing with the teams like the Pittsburgh Steelers. They kind of got one stolen from them against the Steelers with the Immaculate Reception. But they finally broke through. I think it was Kenny Stabler and beating the Minnesota Vikings finally to win their first Super Bowl. That is such a meaningful moment in Raiders history. That's why Kenny Stabler is hard to argue Kenny Stabler being on the Mount Rushmore because they were knocking at the door. It was just sometimes a little bit of circumstance or a play here or a play there, and they could have won multiple more championships, Super Bowl championships. But it is what it is. That was a great, great competitive situation between them and the Pittsburgh Steelers. You got to throw the Miami Dolphins in there. When we're talking about great teams, the Raiders, Steelers, and Miami Dolphins in the 70s were just so darn good. And so as a result, the Raiders don't have, you know, probably as many Super Bowl champions as that talent was worthy of getting them. But they finally did break through, and they finally were able to beat the Minnesota Vikings to win their first Super Bowl. And Kenny Stabler, I could vividly remember, you just go, you could watch it all on YouTube, or you could close, for some of us, we can still close our eyes and think about it on that day at the Rose Bowl in Pasadena, and Kenny Stabler just sitting back there, picking apart the Minnesota Vikings and leading, you know, the Raiders to that first Super Bowl championship. That means a lot.
From the text line 702-365-9200, Dame has an interesting spin for this year's team. Who would be on the Mount Rushmore for this year's roster? We're talking players only. I like it, Dame. He says he's got Max Crosby, Devontae Adams, Timo, Trayvon Merrick, and Jacoby Myers. Very nicely done. We'll keep them coming. 702-365-9200. They're flooding in. We'll get to them on the other side. It's Raider Nation Radio. Vinny and Clay on your Wednesday.
Traffic is 27.
Back to the Morning Tailgate with Clay and Vinny.
Branch to the left, Biletnikoff to the right. Stabler back to pass again from midfield. Throwing a deep bomb, going to Branch against Livers. Livers knocks it down. Branch catches it. Touchdown, Raiders! Holy Toledo! What else can happen here on the Lake Michigan Riverfront in Chicago? Livers went up. Looked like he had the interception at the 5. It popped out of his hands, and Branch made the catch and skipped home for 6.
The incredible Bill King, Raiders Radio Network, coming back from the archives as we go deep into the players only Mount Rushmore for the Raiders, and getting your thoughts at 702-365-9200. Vinny Bonsignor, Clay Baker, and you. And let's go out to Strong Beach, California with Funky Raider 31. Good morning to you, sir.
Hey, good morning, you guys. How you guys doing?
Hey, good, thank you.
Excellent, man. How are you doing?
No, pretty good. I have one on the Mount Rushmore that he doesn't seem to get a lot of props like he should, and that's Greg Townsend. You know, Greg Townsend is still holds the sack leader for the Raiders, the sack record for the Raiders and stuff like that, but he doesn't seem to get a lot of respect like I believe he should. So he's definitely on my Mount Rushmore, and I have Art Shell. And I have also Cliff Branch, and I would say George Atkinson, because he was just mean and dirty. He's still with the Raiders, and I love that.
Oh, what a great list, and the heartbeat of the team. Thank you, Funky Raider 31. And I see up on the text line, somebody just put in, like, I haven't heard Jack Tatum's name yet, and that's crazy.
I was just thinking of Jack Tatum. Oh, and God, it's funny because I travel all around the NFL, and you go to some stadiums, and they'll have, like, their little ring of honors or whatever, or, you know, whatever they do to highlight their and there's some where you're like, what, that dude is in your, you know what I'm saying? Because because some teams' history just aren't the same. It's not an equal, you know, proposition. So, like, if you were the Cardinals, you know, they've had some recent players that you
sure
know, but when you think about it, I think Jim Hart, you know, guys like Jim Hart and Larry Doby,
Neil Lomax.
But I mean, it's like, you know what I'm saying? Like, sure. The Cardinals have always been sort of that.
Well, you could probably, it would be hard to find that Mount Rushmore where you put in Larry Fitzgerald. Start with that.
Certainly now, Larry, I would love to see what their who their ring or who
yeah,
their,
no,
Mount
Rush,
it
I
should
know.
Be that we should be able to find it.
I know, it'd be hilarious to see. Here's one from the text line about the Raiders players only Mount Rushmore. I like it. Sal says Stabler, Tim Brown, Charles Woodson, John Matusek. Yes, twos. I love that one. Raider 57, Stabler, Howie, Tim Brown, Seawood, and Ty in Missouri. He says, I don't care who else you put on there, but for me, Bo Jackson will always be on my Mount Rushmore, forever my favorite player, the reason I am a Raiders fan. About 3 days ago, I took my son to Target. He's 12 years old, and he walked by the Funko Pops. Those are like the little, the new age bobbleheads, and there was a big rack of Bo Jackson, and he just simply asked me, Daddy, who was Bo Jackson? And then after about 12 minutes, I realized after explaining and extolling the virtues of Bo, I could see this glazed look in my son's eyes where he's like, I just simply asked who he was. Because I just say it's superlatives. Oh, and there were commercials about him. And then he ran through the tunnel. He knocked over Bosworth. And then he played right field. It was just awesome, man. It was just too much. I'm with you on that. There are some players where you just open up a can and I can't stop talking about them.
Right, exactly. So, he's Bo Jackson's one of the great what ifs in sports history. Just, I mean, everything got derailed because of that injury he suffered. Over at the Coliseum, the Los Angeles Coliseum, and it didn't even look like it was a serious injury at the time, but you know his fate was forever changed. His football you know career was forever changed based on an injury, and we never got a chance to see full Bo Jackson and full Bo Jackson, whether it was baseball or football. Was just an incredible sight. He just was denied and robbed, quite frankly, of longevity. And it would be that's the great what if. What if he had been afforded a full career in football, a full career in baseball? What exactly would he have done? And it was the sky was the limit. He was the greatest athlete that I ever saw.
And when he got injured, I felt like, that'll be fine. Bo's like a completely misnomer. He doesn't get injured. Here's another one from 702-365-9200. Rob in Oakland, he's like, my personal list will differ from what I would present to other people. He says, my personal list will emphasize players that instilled fear in opponents. Jack Tatum, Art Powell, Bo Jackson, Cliff Branch. Thank you, Rob in Oakland. I love you for that. Just when Wendy's torn. She's like, I can't just pick three players. It's not enough. She does cheat a little bit. That's fine, Wendy. Al Davis, John Madden, Tom Flores, and why not Mark Davis? Very nicely done, Wendy. Appreciate that.
She just totally just said, I can't do the players.
Yeah, can't do it.
I can't do it.
I can't do it. She's like, I'm out. I love them all.
Wendy, you're better than that. Not better than that, but come on. Let's show some resolve and pick your four.
Ooh.
And pick your four. Four right. Players. And obviously, as we said, Al Davis is literally the mountain. he's just unto himself. And so I see what you did there, Wendy. But we need four players. So sit back down. And I know it's emotional, and I know it's impossible almost for the Raiders, but try to come up with your four, and you know, make it personal. Make it, you know, somebody chimed in and said these are the four that I saw personally, I saw live.
So make it like
your era, or just your, when you think of the Raiders, your greatest memories of the Raiders, or when you know. Whatever the case might be, make it personal to you. But I would love to hear from Just Win Wendy on her player-only Mount Rushmore.
All right, keep them coming. Into the third hour we go. We'll talk to Marcus Johnson from Tape Don't Lie on YouTube. He comes up next, and then we'll get more thoughts on your personal Mount Rushmore, players only. It's Raider Nation Radio.